Welcome to My Morning Cup, a podcast produced by Costa Media Advisors and brought to you by the generous support of the Tennessee Valley Authority. To learn more about TVA's impact on our community, follow TVA on Instagram at TVA and on Twitter X at TVA News. My Morning Cup, where we have interesting conversations with genuine people. I'm Mike Costa, your host. My guest this week is Bo Drake. Bo is the Vice President of Economic and Workforce Development, as well as the Vice President of the Tennessee College of Applied Technology at Chattanooga State Community College. Bo, welcome to My Morning Cup. Before we talk about how you were not motivated by school as a kid and you ended up as a leader in education, let me ask, what's in your morning cup?
Thanks, Mike. Black coffee. Just straight black.
Oh, my kind of guy. But you're probably caffeine too, right?
I am caffeine, but I'm not even particular about the brand.
I was going to ask.
No, as long as it's black and lukewarm, it's good.
Do you like it bold or a little lighter?
I'll take bold.
Yeah. Nothing says morning like a nice cup of black bold coffee.
That's the aroma.
Yeah.
If you set it to brew before you wake up, it's wonderful to start the day that way.
It really is. Well, I'm really glad you're here because there's so much going on at Chattanooga State, and your position out there, not only in terms of economic and workforce development has always been so critical, but you've taken on new responsibilities too with Vice President of TCAT. And I want to get to all that, but I want to start at the beginning too. You grew up in Ohio, huh?
I did. Born and raised a Buckeye.
Yeah. Where in Ohio?
On the northeast side of Columbus in a town called Westerville, Ohio.
Oh, yeah. So you are a Buckeye.
Yes.
Yeah. I may have told you before, I was born in Toledo.
Oh, maybe we did talk about that.
Yeah, and moved when I was two. I was able to put together a sentence that said, it's time to move.
So you were not old enough to be indoctrinated into the Buckeye culture? Or?
Well, to a degree. As a kid growing up, because I was born in Ohio, I had Ohio State as one of my favorite teams. And I read a lot of Woody Hayes biographies, the 100-Yard War and all that stuff. And then became a Notre Dame fan because I was Catholic, and that was just natural. You go through confirmation, then you get your fandom at Notre Dame. And then when I went to Tennessee, I became a Tennessee fan.
So you have a lot of good teams to be able to watch and follow throughout the season.
Yeah, it just depends on who's winning, I guess. But I'm diehard Tennessee now. Well, again, welcome. And you know, growing up in Ohio, you know, based on some of the conversations and some of the things we've talked about, probably wasn't the easiest way to grow up, was it? Your folks got divorced at a young age?
Yeah. So my parents got divorced actually before I was even a year old.
Oh, wow.
And I would say at that age, you obviously have no clue that anything's different.
Yeah. That was just life for you.
Yeah. But then as you start to go on and you see your friends are, you know, from nuclear families, it feels different.
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, my mom did not get remarried until I was 16 years old, which was a blessing in a lot of ways. And I will say one of the advantages of being an only child of divorced parents is you get two Christmases and two birthdays. So that was great. But yeah, that is a big part of my life.
And one of the things you told me about your mom getting remarried is that when she got remarried, that's when your grades tanked. Was that a way of expressing your displeasure?
No, it was a way of taking advantage of the situation.
Oh, I misread that then. Yeah.
So when it was just my mom and I, she was able to keep a really close eye on me.
Yeah.
And then when my stepdad came into the picture, the two of them spent a ton of time together, had an opportunity to travel. Of course, I was old enough to leave at home.
Yeah.
But when you left me at home alone and you're not paying as much attention, I took every advantage possible of that time. And, you know, I had a stepdad that took the trash out, cut the grass, changed the lights, and really started taking over household chores that I had done for so long. And as I say, gave me a childhood for the first time.
Oh, well, did you discover any interest at that time, like when you were a teenager, that because as you were growing up, you were doing all those things that it freed you up for?
No. you know, that I really just took advantage of the opportunity to kind of be rebellious. In fact, I was sharing with one of my sons over the weekend, kind of my journey in life. And in my senior year of high school, as long as you had a grade point average of 2.0 or better, you could get a lunch sticker on your student ID, and it meant you could leave school for lunch. So my two periods after lunch were physics and English, and those teachers did not take attendance. So on Fridays, I would get to lunch, and then I would just leave school for the remainder of the day.
Half day Friday.
And it made a significant impact on my grades my senior year of high school. Oh, yeah.
Were you going to a job, or were you just hanging out?
I was just anywhere but at school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you work through high school?
I did work through high school.
Yeah.
I was a bagger at a Kroger for a period of time. My mom was a small business owner, mm-hmm. so I worked at her insurance agency. I was a receptionist there. I went out and took pictures of properties that they had insured. I did manage to get robbed during one of those picture-taking adventures.
Really? Like a mugging?
Like a gentleman walking up to me and admiring the Polaroid camera I was using and asking to take a look at it. And I was, you know, a naive teenager and said, sure. And then he proceeded to walk me behind the building and let me know that he was going to be keeping this camera.
Oh, wow.
And then encouraged me to leave. So
and you listened to him, didn't you?
I did leave. I did, of course, call and report that incident. And then the police were able to show up. And by that time, the camera had already been sold to a neighbor. But we did get it back.
You mentioned your mom being an entrepreneur and having an insurance agency. So what drove her to entrepreneurship?
You know, it's an interesting story. I think when she was in college, it just wasn't the right time for her. And yet she was very driven and very focused and very business oriented. And so an opportunity presented itself for her to go to work at Liberty Mutual and to drop out of college. And she pursued that. And then over time, she ended up meeting a couple of other guys that were going to start an insurance agency. And they were looking for another partner. And she took a risk on herself and went into business with them. And I will tell you, as a kid, we did not have a lot of money. I didn't grow up in the best areas, but I had no idea that that was the truth.
That had to be a great example to you, you know, to see her take that risk on herself.
She's a huge influence in my life, and her motivation and her drive to be successful in spite of the odds. And I think one of the big things for her is she's 5'3", and certainly back in the 1980s, the insurance industry was male dominated, and she carved out her seat at the table. And that inspired me to, take calculated risks and to have self-belief.
Yeah. You used an interesting term that a couple people have talked about on this podcast, which is seat at the table. How important is that?
It's critical. And I think a lot of times those seats aren't given.
Right.
And sometimes they're earned, but sometimes it's a combination of earning and then making sure that you have an opportunity to sit at that table and your voice be heard.
Yeah, you got to go grab them. It's kind of like the old musical chairs. You better have a seat when the music stops.
That's exactly right.
And sometimes you got to fight over that chair.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you had that influence growing up. And then I think you said when you were 20, you moved to Indiana to live with your dad.
I did. So my dad passed away this last August.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Or late July. And one of the greatest gifts that I've gotten from that is I found a 257-page memoir autobiography from my great-grandfather.
Oh, how cool is that?
And he coins his memoir as kind of the last of the pioneers. So he grew up in rural West Virginia. They used wood for heat. They didn't have running water. And he eventually went on to become a dentist. So it's been an awesome thing that he did to leave for the rest of us. But reading about that, his father built their house literally with the wood that surrounded their property. And so then growing up, I did hear my dad tell stories about helping his dad build a house. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 20, my dad had purchased land in Madison, Indiana, and he was in the process of building a log house when I was about 20 years old. And so when the opportunity came for me to live with my dad for the first time and to help him build a house, I just couldn't pass that opportunity up.
That had to be really not just interesting, but because you said your folks divorced before you were born and you lived with your mom. So at 20, you're really going to meet your dad, not necessarily meet him for the first time, but spend a lot of time with him. And you're building a house with him?
Yes. And there was some good and a lot of bad in that process.
You learned about each other, didn't you?
We certainly did. And it was a great experience, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. And at that time, that's really your first introduction to community colleges at that point.
That's right. So I was kind of on this, I was on a path, but it didn't have an ending or direction. And he was a college graduate. And so one day he said, hey, this path you're on is not working. And we drove to town. And he took me to what was a white pole barn with a blue roof. And that's what Ivy Tech State College looked like a few decades ago. And got enrolled in classes. And for the very first time in my life, I fell in love with learning. And it was just a magical experience. I had incredible professors who poured into me, made themselves open, and were just very guiding and helpful throughout that whole process.
Was it what you were studying, or was it the professors and the atmosphere and the attention you were given?
It was not what I was studying.
Yeah.
Though I did love what I was learning, it was more about the people. It was the small environment where the attention was more one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't feel like one of 100. Those professors made you feel like one of one.
Mm-hmm.
They genuinely cared about your success and were so encouraging.
So you earned your associate's degree in what?
Business administration.
And then you went on to Northern Kentucky, is it?
Yeah. So after I earned the business administration degree, I actually applied to Indiana University, Ohio State University. In fact, we came across my acceptance letter to Ohio State a couple of weeks ago.
And you're a big Buckeyes fan.
Big Buckeyes fan. But the challenge was I was living in Indiana now.
Out-of-state tuition.
Out-of-state tuition. Yeah. And even though I was offered a academic scholarship, it wasn't enough to make a difference. And then at IU, the transfer agreements weren't worked out as well as they are today.
Yeah.
And so they were willing to accept me as a first semester freshman, which was unacceptable when I should be going in as a junior.
Yeah, you had 2 years under your belt. You know, that's something that's really changed over the last decade or couple decades, or those transfer agreements. You know, the schools seem to be working more cooperatively now than they did in the past.
I think it's critically important to the success of our collective economy that that happen. We know statistically that transfer students, after completing an associate's degree or go on to a four-year school, generally outperform students that come in as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's advantageous for the universities to accept those students as well.
It's a win-win. I mean, you're getting a student with success under their belt as opposed to a freshman, which is kind of a crapshoot at times, isn't it?
It can be, yes.
Yeah. After you got out of Northern Kentucky, your first job was in insurance, like your mother.
So my senior year at Northern Kentucky, I started applying for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied to become a general manager in training at an extended stay America. And I got the job my senior year final semester. And this is a full-time job.
Yeah.
But I still had full-time school to do. So I actually went to my professors and said, basically, can I audit your class so that I can go to work and start earning money? And remarkably, they agreed to that. And so I got to start this journey as a general manager in training, and then eventually became the manager of a hotel. And I did that for a year. And the day I graduated from Northern Kentucky University, while my family and my now wife's family were all together to celebrate that event, I proposed to Debbie on graduation day. And so shortly thereafter, I left the hotel. I moved back to Ohio to start looking for a job. And this was just a couple of months after 9/11.
Not the best time to be looking for a job, was it?
No, it was an incredibly difficult time to be looking for a job. But because I had managed the hotel and picked up great cleaning skills, my mom and her partners hired me, and then Debbie, after she got married, to start cleaning their office building on nights and weekends. And so that's kind of how we shoestringed it together for the first couple of months until I landed my first job at Progressive Insurance.
So the challenge was finding the full-time job, but you made do until you got that.
We did. We just had to work and we hustled, and we actually ended up owning that commercial cleaning company for the first 10 years of our marriage because we just hung on to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that lead to other accounts?
It did. We ended up having several commercial cleaning accounts, and we would do those on nights and weekends, and that supplemented our income. And then once we left Ohio and moved to Indiana, Debbie was able to stay home and be with our boys most of the time and start her own side business, helping other families that were working.
Now, did you get it all into the insurance field or just ancillaries on the side cleaning the building?
So I worked for Progressive Insurance as a claims adjuster for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And as much as I enjoyed that, I wanted to be on the other side of the policy, if you will. I wanted to meet people before they had a car accident and were upset and, you know, had things to clean up.
Yeah, you know, you never really think about the negativeness that the claims adjuster hears. People aren't necessarily glad to talk to you, are they?
It depends on, you know, your role in the claim.
Yeah, but if you're handing them a check, they are.
It can be very stressful. And so after a couple of years of that, I approached my mom. And of course, for anyone who's grown up in a family business, I think most of the time you think, I'm never going to work in that industry.
Yeah.
But I approached my mom and said, hey, I'd be interested in becoming an insurance agent. And so she connected me to one of her partners to, you know, try and take the bias out of the situation. And I had to take some standardized tests and those were reviewed. And my mom's partner called me one day and took me out to lunch and said, we'd like to hire you at the agency, but I need to be very clear with you. I'll be the one to hire you and I will be the one to fire you if you don't perform. And that was just kind of a mind-blowing experience. I thought, wait, this is a family business.
Yeah.
You know, the response was, yes, this is a family business, but we do business.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of dovetails to a conversation we had earlier with Craig Fuller's podcast. Yeah, Craig very openly said, my dad fired me twice. Yeah. And a lot of people don't think that in family businesses, but it is business if it's going to be a successful business.
And that's exactly right. And when you come on and you're drawing a salary or some sort of income, you're a liability until you start producing some outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made sense. It just was a shock to the system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not what you expect to hear, I'm sure. So talk a little bit about your insurance career, what you liked about it, how long it lasted, and you know, just how that tracked for you.
Yeah. Well, the insurance career was amazing in that I got to work with lots of different people, lots of different industries. I was licensed in both life and health and property and casualty. I really enjoyed the life and health insurance a lot more. And so when my mom ended up selling her interest in the business to her partners, that created a window for me to start looking elsewhere to go to work.
Yeah.
The Ohio State Bar Association started an insurance agency back in the early 90s. And at the time I was looking, they were looking for a new executive director. And so I applied and became the executive director of the Ohio State Bar Association Insurance Agency. And I worked there for about 4.5 years and loved serving the lawyers of Ohio and the work that we did.
So their trade association established a separate insurance agency that really just served the lawyers.
They did. They, in fact, the Ohio State Bar Association was really innovative. They owned an insurance company as well that sold liability insurance to the lawyers in Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's a way to go.
Yes. And so I love that work. I love the opportunity there. And then about this time, the Affordable Care Act was coming into existence. And the majority of our business was health insurance related for small practitioners. And my crystal ball started to dim for the industry and the opportunity there. And so again, I began to look around and I came across an incredible opportunity at Nationwide Insurance to work in a very small division of about 10 people across the U.S. doing mergers and acquisitions. And again, just an amazing work to be able to go to a deeper level with business owners who are looking to make an acquisition, and then also business owners who are looking to exit the business and find those opportunities to marry those two together.
Sounds like those stops in insurance all fed into what you're doing now in terms of you learn sales, you learn customer service, you get into the behind the scenes of mergers and acquisitions and learn the business process with it. Can you talk a little bit about how those contributed to what you're currently doing?
Yeah, especially from the economic and workforce development piece. The biggest thing that we do is listen to business, industry, and community leaders about what their most pressing workforce issues are. And I think my experience has given me insight into the fact that business and industries and communities are headed places, mm-hmm. and they have things that need to be done, and they need tools and resources to be able to accomplish those. And of course, we know right now that nearly a third of age-eligible workers in the United States are just not engaged in the workforce. So it really exacerbates this workforce issue that we have. But drawing on that experience, I'm able to listen and understand from a business perspective, which I think puts me in a unique position to then help translate business to the college and then college to the business.
And it's fair or unfair that I think a lot of businesses, when they talk to academics, think, oh, they don't understand because they don't have the experience. They've been in academics their whole life. But you're really the opposite of that. You came to academics, I guess, mid-career when you went to Ivy?
Yes, when I went to Ivy Tech. And
now, that was that the same Ivy you graduated from?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's sure gotta be cool. It was a blast, and I enjoyed it. But to your point, the analogy that I use is that for decades, higher ed has been writing prescription for business and industry community partners. And a lot of the times we've been writing the same prescription for every ailment that exists.
Yeah.
And we can't do that anymore. We really have to take a collaborative approach, listen to what the challenges and the obstacles are, and then work collectively on creating different training pathways that can alleviate those issues.
It's an interesting way to put it, writing the same prescription. It's almost like, here, take two aspirin, call me in the morning and you'll be fine.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Very ineffective.
So when you got back to Ivy, I want to go back to something you said when you went there as a student. You went into an atmosphere that had you fall in love with education, the size, the concern and all. So when you got there, was that your first thought of, I can have an impact on these students?
Absolutely. I feel drawn to creating opportunity for others. Mm-hmm. That really gets me out of bed in the morning. I've come to really embrace that when your passion and your paycheck align, it's not work. And so that has really been my experience in higher education.
That's a great term too. When your passion, your paycheck align, it's not work. And that's true because a lot of people have those big paychecks, but their passion's not there.
That's right.
And it's work. And it's worse than work. It's dread. You know. And then it's the others have their passion, but the paycheck's not there either. But I think the passion a lot of times soothes over some of those paycheck issues too.
Well, it makes it a lot easier to get out of bed and stay focused on your work.
Yeah. And when you're at Ivy, you talked about a career-changing trip you took to Nashville. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I'm not talking about going down on South Broadway.
That's exactly right. When I was in Evansville, Indiana, we had the Chamber, our development district, and a major local employer. We took a trip to Nashville to visit the Chamber of Commerce. And I was invited along on that trip. And I remember sitting at the Chamber in Nashville and just listening to them speak about how Tennessee worked, mm-hmm. and how higher education in Tennessee worked, of course, with Tennessee Reconnect, Tennessee Promise. And I could just hear these individuals talk about the investment the legislature was making in higher education. And on our 2.5 hour drive back to Evansville, I just reflected that I was doing the right work in the wrong state.
Interesting.
And so I got home and started talking to my wife about, hey, there's this other state called Tennessee, and I think we need to go explore it.
You know, maybe this is a little biased for growing up in Tennessee, but a lot of times, and it's really only been over the last decade that you hear that Tennessee's the innovator on some things. It's almost the opposite. We did a city visit to Evansville, and they were doing some unique things. But to hear that the Tennessee Reconnect and some of those programs, I believe that was Governor Haslam who started those.
Yes.
That was pretty prescient, wasn't it?
It was. It really just a game changer. And I'll tell you, a lot of other states, in fact, just in the last couple of months, we've had other states come and visit the campus, and they bring a delegation of politicians with them as well. Folks want to see what's happening in Tennessee and especially in Chattanooga.
Well, and that was such a unique way to go about it, because I don't think anyone had done it at that point. So we're going to give you your first 2 years of college free if you go to a vocational or community school.
That's right. I think this was the first program at scale.
And it's proved successful.
It has proven successful.
So you go to your wife and say, I think we really need to look at Tennessee. So what did you start pursuing there in terms of opportunities? And was Chattanooga the first thing you saw and pursued, and that worked out?
Yeah. Well, funny story, and you know, when I started looking, there was an opportunity actually at the board office in workforce development, and I applied for that job and then was rejected from that job, said, no, we're not interested in talking to you, and maybe taking a play out of my mom's book, I emailed the board office and said, I think you've made a mistake. I'm the guy you're looking for.
I like that move.
But they assured me that they still did not want to talk.
We didn't make a mistake.
So I started using LinkedIn, actually, and looking for people that were connected in higher education in Tennessee, and reached out to a couple of them, including Kenyatta Lovett, who history goes back to Tennessee Promise with him as well. And I sent him a blind email and said, hey, trying to break into Tennessee and higher ed. Can you spare me a few minutes? And so he did, along with another gentleman.
And you didn't know him at all. This was a blind LinkedIn, hey, help me out.
Probably from my cold call sales days.
Yeah.
But yes. So I just reached out, and both of them agreed to spend some time with me on the phone. And I just talked to them about my passion for education, for creating opportunity, the vision that I had. And they were very encouraging, and I said, can I use you to help open a door? Can you just get my resume on a desk? I know that I have to do the work from there, but any help would be appreciated. To this day, I don't know if either one of them did anything to help me, but it wasn't too long after that that I was invited to interview for the job at Chattanooga State.
Well, you know, even if they didn't, they probably boosted your confidence because they listened.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And I love that story because you're using LinkedIn, you're reaching out blindly. And what I found over the years, when you're in those situations, there's a magic phrase that most people respond to. Can you help me?
Absolutely.
A lot of times when you say that to someone, even if you don't know them, most people are willing to help. You know, and particularly when you're taking the assertive steps to reach out to them, and you've got the passion, that motivates people to help you. And it's a great lesson for people listening.
Well, it is. I wasn't trying to sell anybody anything or get their attention to show them something. It was just a genuine request.
Yeah.
And to your point, they did respond.
Yeah, they didn't know you from Adam, but I guarantee you they went home and told their spouse, you wouldn't believe what happened today. Someone just reached out to me blindly. And they're flattered by that.
You're exactly right. I know when I get calls or emails of, can you help me? I actually feel a responsibility to help others.
Yeah, that's a great point. What a way to break in. So they did or didn't get your resume on the right desk, and how's that lead to Chattanooga State?
So I was offered an opportunity for a virtual interview. That went well. And one of my interesting, at least to me, stories for an interview in Tennessee weather as a guy who grew up in Ohio, is I was invited to interview in September of 2017. And so I brought my wife and boys down, and we stayed at a hotel. The next morning, I think my interview was supposed to start at, say, 11 a.m. And I get a call from the HR manager who says, and it's about 8 o'clock at this time, can you be here at 9? Sure, I can be there at 9. What's going on? There's a hurricane coming and we're closing the school early. And I went to my wife and said, apparently a hurricane is getting ready to hit Tennessee, and so I need to go to my interview 2 hours early. And that's when I learned about how impactful high winds and the rains are here in the mountainous region. But that was a pretty wild experience. But the interview went well, and that led to the job offer.
At least it wasn't the quarter inch of snow that just paralyzes us.
Well,
particularly for an Ohio kid.
That's right. So Debbie, Boston, and Hunter joined me in January of 2018.
Yeah.
And I remember waking them up one morning and saying, boys, you have a snow day. They jumped out of bed, threw open the blinds, and looked outside, and there was no snow on the ground. And they said, Dad, are you kidding? No, I'm not kidding. School is closed today for snow, even though we don't have any snow.
That's the beauty of Tennessee.
Yes.
So they offered you the job, and you started in 2018?
November of 2017.
November of 2017. That was Vice President of Workforce and Economic Development.
Correct.
And through that time in there, what were some of the things that, well, first, what did you want to come in and accomplish in terms of structure and focus? And then what were some of the industries that you worked with?
Yeah, when I first came in, probably some of the best job advice I ever got was when I was at the Ohio State Bar Association and I took over the insurance agency. My boss came to me and said, I don't want you to touch anything for 6 months. Just observe, poke around, but don't make any significant changes, which is hard to do for 6 months.
But you're also trying to prove yourself to a degree too.
That's right. You know, when you think about what are your deliverables in the first 100 days kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that advice was great. So I really came in with curiosity and wanted to observe what was going on and how things worked. It was clear to me that from a team perspective, we had incredible people, but we weren't crystal clear on what our goals and objectives were. And so we spent really probably the next 6 to 12 months getting really crystal clear on what it was that we were trying to accomplish. I'm a big believer in empowering people and then stepping back and watching what they'll do. There are very few experiences where I've been disappointed or let down. I think most people rise to the occasion when given the opportunity. And so that's really my style. And over the last 6 years, the workforce team has really blossomed in embracing that. And so, as I like to say, our job is to go play in traffic. It's not to sit at the college.
Yeah.
Our job is to go out and be at industry meetings. It's to go knock on doors, build relationships, and really get our fingers on the pulse of what's happening in communities in Southeast Tennessee. That puts us in a position where we can listen, and then we can start to become part of the solution to some of the biggest challenges that our business and industry partners are having.
This is a strange way to put it, but it's a compliment. You're a non-academic academic. And what I mean by that is your work experience and career experience is contributing more to you're bringing more of that into the academic world than the academic world's pulling you back.
I think you make a great point. And I think what is great about Chattanooga State and the opportunity that we have to serve this community in particular is that you have the community college and the TCAT that share the same administration. Two different delivery methods as far as education, with Chattanooga State being associate's degrees, earning credit hours, the TCAT are hands-on diploma and certificate programs that are...
If I can interrupt you, explain the difference a bit from the standpoint of Chattanooga State's unique in that most TCATs aren't on a community college campus.
We are the only place in the entire state of Tennessee where the TCAT and the community college share the same campus, let alone the same administration.
They're very separate.
Everywhere else in the state, they're very separate. And what I think that does for us as an organization in our community, more importantly, is we're not competitive.
Yeah.
We're supportive of one another. And then when you add the element of the economic and workforce development arm of the college, where we're primarily building short-term training programs that can last a couple of weeks to a couple of months. And on the workforce side, we can build those programs outside of academic calendars. We can deliver them at 6 in the morning, 6 at night. We're really built to be responsive to the need of business and industry. And that, I think, is incredibly supportive for a community. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I have access to hundreds of brilliant minds through our faculty members. And so we can tap into them for their knowledge, experience, and how to deliver education. And then we can invite them out of the classroom to be able to deliver in real time to folks that are going back to work after this training or have to implement the new training right away.
Again, this is going to sound a little strange, but as someone who grew up and went to a four-year university, so I grew up and I went to college in 1980. And in 1980, it was almost a letdown if you went to a community college.
Yeah.
Or you're going to a community college. I don't get that sense in today's world, and particularly with Chattanooga State. How have you found Chattanooga State different from, say, your experience at Ivy or what you see with other community colleges? Is it the campus and the faculty and the leadership? Is it the city? Is it everything combined? Is it just a special time to be there?
It's a special time to be there. It is the support of the region. Absolutely the leadership of the college with Dr. Ashford.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly encouraging, supportive of innovation, willing to take risks and to do things in new and different ways that I think position us to be able to thrive and to really break the mold. I mean, we understand that education is a changing landscape, just like every industry right now is changing. You can either get changed or you can lead the change. And I would like to think that we're leaning into leading the change, which is a much better position to be in because then you're not on defense.
Right.
And you're able to move aggressively into the future. And there's certainly still things that we need to learn and opportunities that we're not even aware of yet. But we don't run away from those and we embrace them. And I think that that's a pretty unique feature. But I think we have all the tools given that Chattanooga State, the TCAT, and workforce are all at the same place.
And TCAT's in a new facility, right, on campus?
I just had a ribbon cutting last week for our advanced manufacturing facility. It's 45,000 square feet, cutting-edge technology, primarily in industrial maintenance, automation, and robotics, as well as industrial electricity. But we have several other classes there, computer support technology, medical assisting, business operation professional. It is a state-of-the-art facility that I think the term that I'm using now, as you were asking about community colleges versus four-year schools, we're creating the next generation of noble professionals. These folks work hard. They're leaders in their workplace and in their community. Maybe one of the most famous locally that we proudly claim as our own is David Wade from EPB.
Oh, yeah.
Who started at the TCAT.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And David's been instrumental in driving EPB, obviously, and now into the quantum world.
That's right. Brilliant mind. You know, our local advertising often says, start here, go anywhere. And we mean that. We have students that have transferred to Stanford and to Harvard. And I think the way Tennessee is positioned, it's a strong argument for students coming out of high school or returning students to get a TCAT diploma or certificate or an associate's degree or both and then transfer to a great school like UTC.
Well, and the reality is coming out of high school at 17 or 18, it's hard to make a life decision of here's the four-year school I'm going to go to or the investment I'm going to make to go to that when you've got a resource at your disposal.
And Mike, I appreciate you making that point. I hear people, in my opinion, all too often say, oh, so-and-so is going to be a welder.
Yeah.
Or they're going to cosmetology school. And it's almost a negative connotation in the sense. I don't know a whole lot of people in my professional life who are working in the field for which they obtained their four-year college degree.
You know, we've talked to a lot of people on this podcast, and I'd say 80, 90% are not doing anything associated with what they thought they would do. You know, most, like yourself, took a job, did the best job they could. That opened the door for another opportunity, whether it was in the same field or whether it was in a new field.
That's exactly right. And that's why I think we need to continue to embrace technical education and the opportunity that community colleges provide. One of the big things that we've been working on really for the last 5 years that in some ways feels like an overnight success. Mm-hmm. Is college-sponsored apprenticeship programs. They go a long way to solving workforce challenges today. We know a lot of students that are looking for higher education right now mm-hmm. have parents, family members that lived through the Great Recession, the housing crisis. They're risk-indebted adverse. They don't want to contribute to the $1.7 trillion of debt. And so they're looking at education in different ways, and yet our employers are still kind of waiting at the end of the rainbow for the Skittles to fall out when students graduate.
Yeah.
And when I look at students at the TCAT Community College or even the four-year schools, I use the analogy that my boys play soccer. And if they had to go to soccer for 1 year, 2 years, or 4 years just to practice, that's all they got to do for that time before they got to go play in a game. One, they'd probably be frustrated. But when they got done with their 1, 2, 4 year degree, and then they came and said, Mr. Costa, we'd like to play for your team. The very first question you know is going to get asked, but do you have any experience?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we could do a better job of marrying education and employment simultaneously so that while a student is in school to become a welder or going into business administration, they should be working in the field for which they're studying, not stocking shelves at a grocery store at night.
Yeah.
Admirable profession, but we can do better in aligning these things, which I think will take a lot of pressure off of our workforce challenges.
That has been the big buzzword for the last decade is workforce development, workforce challenges. And if we hear anything in Chattanooga, there's two things that potential employers moving in that our challenges are. One is flat land.
Right.
And the other is workforce development. What's your workforce like?
Yeah. And it's a big challenge. And if we continue to do what we've always done, we're going to continue to get the results that we've always gotten. And those are diminishing returns today. So again, there's an incredible opportunity to take a leadership role in the college-sponsored apprenticeship space.
Before we run out of time, I do want to get to a couple more things. Explain the four disciplines of execution.
Yeah, so I'll give you the high level of the book, and it's a great book. And it basically says that there are MBAs that come out of well-known schools that are really good at strategy. And so they'll go in and consult with businesses, and they come up with a new strategy or a new plan, which are great. But the challenge for the company has always been on the execution of those plans. And so this book really highlights what do you need to do in order to be successful. It talks about wildly important goals. And so each layer or division of an entity will have its own goals, but all of those goals ultimately feed up into, you know, what you might consider to be the executive goals for the organization. And you can take those goals and then develop leading and lagging indicators to know, hey, are we moving the needle towards the objective we're trying to achieve?
Mm-hmm.
If you are, keep going. If you're not, then make some adjustments along the way. But my workforce team in particular and I, we went through that book. And one of the great examples in that book, they talk about Apple as a company. And Apple could develop any product you want, but they don't want to. They want to be really good at the few products that they do develop. And that really highlights the intensity about having wildly important goals, something that you're so passionate about that nothing else can influence it. It sharpens the mind and creates focus, and we've seen the results of that, and they're successful.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up Apple because you were talking about hiring smart people and letting them do their jobs, and I think Steve Jobs was famous for his quote of, why do we hire smart people and tell them what to do? We should hire smart people and get the hell out of their way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it's Ken Blanchard wrote a book a long time ago, and a former boss of mine had him as a professor at Ohio University, but it's called the 1 Minute Manager.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole point is to have a conversation about we're at A, we need to get to B, and there's no roadmap. I just need you to get us there.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you trust others and start to build their confidence and then create a high-performing organization.
Yeah. I really appreciate you being in here. I wish we had more time to talk because it's, you know, I find not just what you're doing fascinating, but how it contributes to the community. And I don't think Chattanooga would be where it is today if it didn't have the workforce development at Chattanooga State and the cooperation from UTC and those academic partners willing to craft programs that are going to serve the needs of Vocker or serve the needs of Volkswagen or whomever the industry may be, because you guys crafted those things specifically for those companies, right?
That's exactly right. You know, we have been responsive to the needs of business, and in those cases in particular, proven that when the opportunity arises, we can harness it and build what they need.
Yeah, and you absolutely have. As I get to my last question, I do want to remind listeners who makes this all possible, and that's the Tennessee Valley Authority, another important partner who does a lot with economic development and workforce development.
TVA is an incredible organization. You know, as someone who grew up in the Midwest, I am inspired by all that TVA does and just what a backbone to this region it provides. It's an incredible organization.
Yeah, all throughout the state, but particularly on the eastern side of the state. You know, just think of the hydroelectric dams and now the nuclear power.
It's unbelievable. Shameless plug for Tennessee and the Chattanooga region, but I'll tell you, my energy bills were cut less by more than half moving here.
Well, now that they're sponsoring my morning cup, they may go up. And you can follow TVA on social media to learn more about its multifaceted mission of service. Visit TVA.com/do good here to explore exciting TVA career opportunities. All right, Bo, last question. What would you tell your 25-year-old self is important for a happy life?
Lean into opportunities, take risks, make sure they're calculated risks, but don't be afraid of the fear of failure. I think it's incredibly important, and I've listened to several of your podcasts, Mike, and I hear others talk about their unsmooth journey from where they began to where they find themselves. And a lot of times you need failure along the way to help turn you into the person that you're going to become and put you on the path that you belong on. So I think at 25, it's really take calculated risks and don't waste time.
Yeah. Good advice. You listen to most successful coaches and they will tell you they learn more from a defeat than they do from any victory.
That's exactly right.
Great conversation, great fun. Respect what you're doing. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with me.
Mike, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to My Morning Cup, a podcast by Consta Media Advisors. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend. I release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to podcasts.